Right, so I'm now recording, and thank you all for agreeing to allow me to record. What we're going to do is the structure of the weeks that we have remaining. There's 5 weeks. We're going to look at each of the four components of NVC in 4 weeks, and then the fifth week will be basically putting it all into practice. So in this first week, we're going to look at the context of NVC. That's the bigger picture. And the spoiler alert is the bigger picture is compassion. So we're going to do some exercises around compassion and how see how the NVC skills fit into that. And then we're going to look at the first of the core skills, which is observations. So with that, there are two parts to NVC. The training here, and indeed in most NVC trainings, focuses on the NVC skills because that is something that can be taught and can be practiced. But those skills fit within a framework. And the context in which those skills apply is that the person using NVC has a conscious intent to be compassionate. And that conscious intent is absolutely vital. If you're using the NVC skills without that intent, then certainly, in the words of Marshall Rosenberg, you're not using NVC. And it's possible if you're not intending to be compassionate, you can end up being quite manipulative because the skills are designed to change people's behaviors and perceptions. So I urge and implore you to always, within this group, when we're practicing and when you're using NVC out in the real world, to have compassion in your mind. Having said that, the training focuses on the skills. And that's kind of the right thing to do because the skills can be taught and they can be learned, whereas compassion is much harder to teach that. So while you're learning NVC, you tend to focus on the skills because that's what you're learning. And then as you become more proficient, you can start to forget about the skills and you can bring to your mind your compassionate intention. So that's fine. And it's also really easy to forget about compassion when you're really focusing on, did I get that skill right or not? And so just a reminder to be compassionate to yourself as well when you're practicing. And if you get it wrong, that's fine. We're learning, we're practicing. This is the best place to get it wrong because you will learn from that. So that is the context. It's a conscious intent to be compassionate. And I can't really teach you how to be compassionate. That is above my pay grade, as they say. But what we can do is we can do an exercise. And I don't know how many of you have done any work in eye gazing before, but what we're going to do that now. And eye gazing over Zoom is really quite a tricky process. I find it hard because if I'm looking at the person's eyes, I'm not looking at the camera. So it looks to them as though I'm not looking at their eyes. And one way of getting around that is to alternate. So you spend some of the time looking at the camera and the other time looking at the screen, looking at their eyes on the screen. Now, if your camera is near the top of the screen, it doesn't make a lot of difference, but for some people, it is a big difference. So I'm going to invite you to just work with that, however in whatever way it works best for you. And I'm going to suggest that we don't go into breakout rooms for this. So what we're going to do is we're going to use pinning to, so we'll all be in the same room, but I'm going to invite each of you to pin. Are you all familiar with how to pin someone to a screen? Okay, so if you look in the it's probably in the top right hand corner. In fact, if you don't even need to do that, are you all using a computer rather than a phone? Yeah. So if I ask you to pin someone's image, what you do is you click on their image, and then you will see up in the top right hand corner of their image a little menu appearing with three dots, and if you go down that menu, there will be an option to pin to the screen. And if you select that, their image will fill up the screen and the others will all go to a gallery bar either at the top or the side. So that means that you and that other, if that other person's pinned you, then you are effectively looking at each other and everyone else is in the room, but they're not looking at you. So I'm going to ask you to pin, and Becky, if you could pin with Joe and vice versa, and Mark, if you could pin with Adrian and vice versa, and Jaden, you will pin with me. And so if you'd like to do that now. And hopefully you're now looking at your partner you're going to be working with this exercise. And it's going to take about 10 minutes. And for this exercise, what I would like you to do is, first of all, we're going to take it in turns. So first of all, I want you to decide who's going to go first, and negotiate that in whatever way you. In fact, no, for this one, you don't even need to go first, but you're going to both go at the same time. So you're going to look into the eyes of the other person. And as you look, we're going to spend about 2 minutes gazing at each other. And I want you to say to yourself, as you look at that person, just like me, this person feels pain, sadness, and fear. And just keep saying that to yourself. Just like me, this person feels pain, sadness, and fear. And so we'll have about 2 minutes of that, then we'll take a break, and then we'll do the next part of the exercise. So is everyone happy to for that? Give me a thumbs up if you are. Jolly good. So I can't put the timer on because I'm obviously eye gazing at the moment and only Jaden would see it. So I will just say when to start and stop. So yeah, you start now. Remember, just like me, this person feels pain, sadness, and fear. Okay, so just relax, take a moment to come back to yourself, and then we're going to do the same thing again. But this time, you're going to say to yourself, just like me, this person feels love, joy, and excitement. So just like me, this person feels love, joy, and excitement. And while you're doing that, notice if you feel any differently within yourself to the first time. So when you're ready, then you can start the second eye gaze now. Just like me, this person feels love, joy, and excitement. Okay, thank you. And pause and take a break from that intense scrutiny. And we're going to do this one more time. And the third time, I invite you to say to yourself, just like me, this person is doing everything they can to meet their needs. Just like me, this person is doing everything they can to meet their needs. So when you're ready, you can start now. Just like me, this person is doing everything they can to meet their needs. Okay, thank you very much. You can stop eye gazing now. And if you right click on that the main screen, there should be an option to remove the pin. And if you remove the pin, that will take you into the speaker view. And then if you look, usually up at the top right hand corner, there's a view option, and you can go to the gallery view and see everyone. So if you'd like to unmute yourselves and say how that felt for you.
I'll go first. So I was struggling to feel compassion at first with Joe, well, just struggling to feel it. And then just at the very end, I started to feel this compassion. And then when it, joy and the excitement, it was a much warmer feeling. And then the end one was just kind of very, felt very settling and calming for me.
And do you know what caused that transition from not feeling compassion to suddenly feeling compassion? What happened?
I kept on saying the words. I kept on, I don't know, it was just time. It took time.
Mm-hmm.
It took time. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
I'll go next then, since I'm your partner, Becky. I found it strangely comfortable from the beginning. I've done that in person and I don't like to do that. I found that I was able to sort of not want to look away, which I think in person I do that. By the way, that camera thing, I think I ended up just looking. Did you, Becky, as well? I thought that we stopped looking at the camera and we were just looking at each other.
Yeah, I thought I was just looking at you and you were just looking at me.
First one. And I had that same response to you on that final part. It felt so calm. And I almost lost who I was and sort of evaporated into you a bit, which is weird. Without any, I don't know about whether I felt any compassion. What I did feel is I felt like I tapped into your sadness. Like I felt some sadness in your eyes, and that was great. So that was the compassion for me. I felt like I don't think there was like this moment where I didn't feel compassion and then compassion, but yeah, I did feel like there was sadness there. But yeah, that calmness right on the last was really, really nice. I felt that too. That's it.
Anyone else?
I was just going to say, I think when I started, I was feeling quite self-conscious, you know, like it's just the concept of looking at someone directly for so long. And I was kind of, in my own head, maybe like it's kind of self-focused, but then kind of switched somewhere halfway through. And then on the last one, I just felt a bit of like acceptance of the other person, you know, just kind of saying, okay, that the lines were kind of making sense in my head. Like I was thinking less and just kind of thinking, oh yeah, I accept this kind of person across from me, you know, like, and it's, yeah, quite interesting switch when like more time is spent in it, you know, like, and yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, I can share. It's an exercise or a, I don't know if it's an exercise, I'm usually very comfortable. I really like looking into people's eyes. And I think at the beginning, being on the computer plus reminding myself of the sentences, I felt quite disconnected. Plus starting with words that I associate with more negative emotions, I felt uncomfortable. And that eased throughout the exercise, to a form of contentment, I guess, at the end, being very present in the moment, kind of forgetting about the sentence and forgetting about what really I was trying to achieve, just being there. And so that was, so that was a nice progression towards that sort of, presence, I think.
Thank you.
I can share too. I found the first two quite straightforward. I thought it was quite easy to feel compassionate. But then interestingly, by the last one, I think maybe the words were different, but I felt very disconnected and I was distracted to examples of my day at work and thinking about what people had done and like how they were just trying to meet their needs, but like why had they been so rude and horrible? It was like, and that really took me away from the moment. Which was just a shame, but the first two worked really well for me.
Thank you. So what I've taken from that exercise is, first of all, it takes time. Compassion isn't something you just switch on. You have to allow yourself the time to get into it. And that seems to be reflected in what some of you were saying, was apart from you, Jaden, that you felt more comfortable with the exercise towards the end. And the other thing that strikes me is that being compassionate is hard sometimes. There are conflicting thoughts and our own needs that get in the way of being compassionate. And so it's good to remember that. And just allow yourself the time for compassion to arise and recognize that sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes you just want to hit the bastard. But that was an attempt to give you a flavor of compassion. As I say, it's not something you can really teach. It's only something that comes with experience. I guess the other thing that struck me is when you were saying that as you stopped thinking about the words, the compassion came more, you felt more comfortable with it. And that is exactly what I was saying about we have to focus on the skills, but once you've got the skills, you can allow your compassion to manifest itself and to just take over. And as the skills become automatic, you get to the point where you can consciously choose to be compassionate, and the skills will just support you in that. So that's the first half. I think this is probably a good time to take a break. So Adrian.
I just have a quick question, yep. If I may, about what you said. I guess my question, I don't need an answer right now, I guess, but my question is, but I'd be interested to hear people's thought, is when I find myself, specifically recently, I find myself a lot in a situation where I observe that I tell myself that I should be more compassionate in a given situation, or I should feel more connected to that person, or I should, and I don't really know what to do when that happens, because I tend to then be very much in my head in saying, you know, you don't need to be, or you don't, or you shouldn't, or it's a lot of should or shouldn't, and it kind of like stays up here, and the whole purpose of being connected to the moment, the person, the situation completely becomes secondary. And I think I wasn't aware of it at all in the past, and now I'm becoming a lot more aware of these situations, and it's really frustrating to not know how to deal with it.
Thank you
for sharing, Adrian. I had my hand up, but I don't think you saw. I've got something. We had a drawing on how to what compassion looked like, but my washing machine's going off in the background, so I don't know if you can, I can show it. I don't think I can show it to you. Can you see that?
Unfortunately, to me, it just looks like a blank piece of paper.
Okay, well, maybe I'll have another go at it.
Maybe you could share it on the WhatsApp group afterwards.
Yes, it's basically you've got two mountains and you're on your mountain with your whatever's on your mountain, and the other person's on their mountain with whatever they've got on their mountain. In order to feel compassion, you have to go down your, climb off your mountain and climb onto their mountain. And that's what takes the time.
That's pretty good. Actually, I'm really glad you raised that, Adrian, because that leads directly into what we're going to be doing in the second half. So, well spotted. So, if we can take a 5-minute break now, and back at 8:03. Okay, just waiting for Jo to get back, and or maybe she's back and has her camera off. There she is. Jolly good. So, has anyone got any questions from what we did in the first half before we dive into the second part? Okay, so nonviolent communication has got four core skills, or I like to call them the four pillars of NVC. And each of those core skills or pillars has got a shadow. And so I'm just going to list them now. And then, as I said at the beginning, we're going to spend time this week, this month, on the first of them. And then we'll deal with the other three in the subsequent 3 weeks. So the first core skill is the skill of observation. And its shadow is evaluation. And this is, Adrian, where you talked about the shoulds and musts. That is all evaluative. So what we're going to look at today is we're going to look at how do you just observe, how do you bracket your judgments and your shoulds and musts to allow you to just observe. And the second core skill, which we're going to deal with next month and we're going to look at, is feelings. And the shadow of feelings is thoughts. So we're going to look at the difference between when you feel something and when you think something, and how to recognize that difference and how to work with that difference. The third pillar is needs. And the shadow of needs is strategies. So in NVC, the needs are universal human needs. They're what everyone needs. But the strategies are how you achieve those needs. And you could have two people with the same needs having completely different strategies for meeting those needs. There was an example of one NVC trainer gave, he's an American, and so the use of guns in America. And he said, you've got two people. One is appalled by all the school shootings and wants gun control. And another one is a libertarian who wants more people to have guns. And they both have a need for safety, but their strategies for meeting that need are diametrically opposed. So we're going to look in that month, we're going to look at the difference between needs and the strategies for meeting those needs, and how to decide if your need is actually really a strategy and what is the underlying need. And then the fourth pillar is requests. And the shadow of requests is demands. So a request is, in NVC, a request is about meeting, is requesting someone to meet your needs, but also meeting their needs at the same time. So it's a two-way interaction, whereas a demand is just about meeting your needs without caring about the other person's needs. So we will look at that in the fifth week, and then in the last week we're going to put it all together and do some scenarios around that. So having said that, we're going to now look at the difference between observations and evaluations. And this exercise, it's very simple. We're not going to go into breakout rooms to do it. I am going to read out a number of statements. And for each one, I want you to decide, is this an observation or is it an evaluation? And don't forget, an evaluation is basically anything that is about judging whether something is good or bad, or a should or a must. that's kind of an evaluation about what should happen. So is it a pure observation or is it an evaluation? And so we'll do a vote for each one. So each one I'm going to say, I'll read out the statement, and then if you think it's an observation, you can vote with your right hand. And if you think it's an evaluation, vote with your left hand. And we'll see how we get on with that. So everyone happy to start? Your starter for 10 is the statement that she works too hard. So right hand if you think it's an observation, left hand if you think it's an evaluation. I'm seeing lots of left hands there. And I agree, I think that is an evaluation. She works too hard. You're not observing, you're judging. So the second one, my new computer is 3 times faster than my last one. Is that a judgment or an evaluation or an observation? And I'm seeing lots of right hands. I agree. It's a statement of fact.
Why is my hand different from everybody else's?
Because you've probably got your camera switch to on reverse. You can so when I say right, you'll have to say left. And
okay.
So the third one, so that one was my new boss wants me to work. No, that was my new computer is 3 times faster than my last one. The third one is my new boss wants me to work 3 times faster than my last one. So is that an evaluation or an observation? I'm seeing lots of left hands there. No, I'm seeing a right hand. So who wants to say why they think it's an observation or an evaluation? Joe?
It's an observation. Because it's just a fact.
Okay, anyone want to disagree or disagree?
I was going to say you want, so is that an evaluation then?
I would say that is an evaluation because I am saying here what I think my boss wants. I don't know that that is what my boss wants. My boss hasn't said, so I am evaluating that that is what my boss wants.
And also it is judging, isn't it? Because you're judging 3 times faster.
Well,
he might have actually asked though.
But that statement itself is a judgment but I was contrasting it to the first, the one before that, where there's no person involved and we're quite happy to say my new computer is 3 times faster than the last one, and everyone says that's fine, that's an observation. But as soon as you bring people into the mix, it doesn't become an observation anymore, it becomes an evaluation because you're evaluating a person. So the next one, my answer, you, Joe, the next one said, my new boss said they wanted me to work 3 times faster than my last one. Is that an observation or an evaluation? So everyone's going with observation? Because I'm just saying what they said. Now, that may be true or not true, but it is just an observation of what they said. So, yeah, they can be a bit tricky, but if you pick the words very carefully, you can usually pick it out. My neighbour is friendly. Oh. I'm going to go for an evaluation there. Anyone else with me on that? And anyone isn't with me? No, so we're saying that's an evaluation. All right, so and the next one, my boss is a micromanager. Yeah, you're getting the picture. If we're talking about someone else, we are making an evaluation. We don't know what they're thinking.
So also, I mean, that last one could be an observation, right? Like if your boss is on your back, every single thing you do.
Well, it could be, but it kind of needs a little bit of refinement because you might mean micromanager, might mean something very different to what your boss means.
Yes.
So you're still kind of evaluating.
But also with NVC, if you say my boss is a micromanager, or you say my boss asked me, and you list the factually what they ask you to do, that's the difference.
That's right. Yeah. So you're taking your any ambiguity out of it to make it an observation. So here's the next one: the consequences of Brexit were worse than predicted. Evaluation or observation? I'm going to go, I think it's an observation. I'm not saying who predicted it, but there were a lot of people making predictions about Brexit, and the consensus seems to be that it's turned out worse for a lot of people, not for everyone. Some people have come out better, so maybe it is an evaluation. If I'd said for me the consequences of Brexit were worse than predicted, that would very much be an observation, because I'm observing what happened to me. So I've got three more linked ones. So I parked my car in front of your house, blocking the drive. You think everyone thinks that is an observation. Yeah, I parked my car in front of your house, blocking the drive. So the next one is, I deliberately parked my car in front of your house, blocking the drive. Everyone happy that that is also the fact that I did it deliberately doesn't change the fact that I'm talking about me. So it's an observation.
Okay. No.
You're not. Okay. So why do you think it's an evaluation?
Because of the word deliberately. It felt, I parked my car in front of the drive, sounds like an observation, but they deliberately, as soon as that word is in there, feels like it's violent communication. I don't know, it feels.
But I'm talking about me. And I know whether I was deliberate or not.
Okay, fine, I got it, I understand.
So here's the third one. You deliberately parked your car in front of my house, blocking the drive.
Okay, that's an evaluation.
Yeah. So you see the difference. If you're talking about yourself, you can make observations because you know what is going on. But if you're talking about other people, you don't know what's going on. So unless they have told you and you're reporting on what they said, you're making an evaluation.
This is the bit that needs practice, isn't it?
Well, that's why we're practicing it. Okay, the next one. You owe me £10. Yeah, most people seem to be going for an observation. That is kind of a statement of fact. I gave you £10 in the past and you haven't given it back to me yet, so you owe it to me. So the next one, you owe me an apology. Everyone happy that that's an evaluation? Yeah. Brexit means Brexit. I am going to go for an evaluation on that one because it doesn't mean Brexit. I mean, what does that mean? And the last one, non-violent communication doesn't work on some people. Everyone happy that that is an evaluation, not an observation? I would say that that is probably quite a flawed statement in many ways. One is that nonviolent communication isn't supposed to work on people. It's not a tool for working on people. So it's a bit of a shaky statement to make in the first place. You don't use nonviolent communication to work on someone, because that is, we'll cover that in the requests and demands. That is making a demand of the person, expecting it to work. But I would say that, and it's not a true statement, I don't think you can say it doesn't work on some people. I think what you could say possibly is that I am not using non-violent communication effectively with some people, but I don't think you can say it doesn't work with some people. So that was a quick exercise in looking at the difference between observations and evaluations. Is everyone kind of comfortable with that now?
Yeah, I just had a question, Edmund. So like basically opinions as well, like anything that is opinion based would be an observation. Is that?
No, an evaluation.
Oh, sorry, an evaluation. I mean, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Anything with opinions, anything that is comparing something with someone else, something else. Well, certainly if you're talking about people, any comparisons like better or worse, those are, if you're talking about things rather than people, like my computer is faster than your computer. Yeah, you can substantiate that and say it's, you don't have to say how much faster it is for it to be an observation. But if you're going to use that logic on people, then it becomes much more, you're evaluating that person. So if it's got, my rule of thumb is if it's got an adjective in it, then it is an evaluation. But you can kind of stretch that. And if you're using adjectives about things, then sometimes you can say that's an observation.
General.
Sorry, Joe, you broke up a bit there.
So it's just general, personal.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's something that you can practice on your own, is just to notice your own, every time you make an observation, just pause and ask yourself, is this really an observation or is it an evaluation? And we'll come back to that when we talk about homework later on. So this, one of the it's not a problem really, it's a fact of life, is that we have evolved to be extremely judgmental creatures. We are very good at making judgments, and there are good evolutionary reasons for that, because out in the savannah, you want to be able to make judgments quickly and act on them, because they will stop you getting eaten by the lion. So being judgmental is not a bad thing. But what happens is that it often gets in the way of compassion and NVC. So what we're asking you to do is to not be non-judgmental. I don't think it is possible to be non-judgmental. I think we are, it just is such an automatic thing that we are judgmental. But what I'm encouraging you to do is to become aware of those judgments and then put them to one side. And that in therapy is called bracketing. So therapists will often say in training, you're taught to be non-judgmental, but you're not really being non-judgmental. What you're being taught to do is to be aware of those judgments and to set them to one side as much as you can, and then to be present with the person, being aware of your judgments, but not being influenced by them as best you can. And just to kind of emphasize how difficult it is to not judge, I'm going to make a statement And I just want you to notice whether you can listen to that statement without thinking it's a good or a bad thing. And the statement I've got is, Russia invaded the Ukraine. And can you hear that and not immediately have a judgment about whether Russia invading Ukraine was good or bad? And then I want you to imagine that you're trying to meet with compassion someone who has the opposite point of view. So a Russian, maybe, who approves of the invasion of Ukraine, and you're trying to meet them compassionately. And I think that maybe will answer what you posted in the WhatsApp group, Adrian. Why can't they come halfway down the mountain to meet me? And the answer is, sometimes they can't. They are not compassionate to you, but you can still be compassionate to them as best you can. So you do have the capacity to go down the mountain and up the other side, even if they're not willing to come down to meet you halfway. In an equal relationship where both people in the relationship are compassionate towards each other, absolutely, you'll both come down and you'll meet in the middle. But sometimes that doesn't happen. And the challenge in being compassionate is to nevertheless go up the mountain to meet them. Doesn't mean you have to agree with them. Becky.
Yeah, I think that's lovely, Edmund. And I just wanted to add to it as well that in order to really inhabit compassion, you almost need to be on their mountain, because their mountain, and see the view and be with them, because their mountain is completely different atmosphere, different experience. You know, so it's not you're meeting in the middle is where, but to some, you know, quite often when we're being compassionate, you have to be with that person, with them, and they have to come to you. And the other thing, self-compassion is staying, getting out of your mountain and all that kind of stuff. But
yeah, I'm not sure how the mountain metaphor fits with self-compassion, but that could be an exercise. Is to
pick yourself out
to fit the mountains on self-compassion. Anyone else got anything they want to say? Okay, so one of the things that allows us to make observations is our awareness. And awareness is something which, as with all of these things, it's very rich and complex. And we could spend a whole 2-hour session just talking about awareness and what you were aware of. But awareness is quite an interesting topic, because it's not the case that you just become aware of something. Sometimes that happens, but usually your brain focuses its attention. There's so much happening in the world, we can't be aware of everything. There's a lot of things that happen in the world, even right in front of us, that we don't notice because we're not aware of them. And it's because our brain is focusing our attention in one direction. And if something happens in the other direction, we just don't notice it. It slips by us. So in order to practice observation, it's a very good practice to practice focusing your awareness. And so I've got an exercise here on awareness, and I'm going to put you in breakout rooms for this. You're going to be working in pairs. So one person will stay in the main room with me, and the other four will go into two breakout rooms. And it's going to last about 10 minutes. You're going to have 5 minutes each. So when you get in the room, decide who's going to go first and who's going to go second. And the person who goes first is simply going to say what they are aware of. So And they've got 5 minutes to just keep saying what they're aware of. And what I would like you to do is to phrase those, that awareness, as observations, not as judgments. So if you, you might say, I'm aware that there's a light above me and it's quite bright and it's shining in my eyes. I'm aware that I'm a bit hungry. And the person who is not saying what they're aware of can pause at any time and challenge a person saying, is that really an observation or is it a judgment? And if they think it's not an observation, I invite you to kind of invite them to delve. So what are you aware of that leads you to make that judgment? So I might say, I'm aware that I'm angry. And so the person who I'm saying that to might challenge me and say, well, how do you know that you're angry? What is the observation? And I might say, I've got a sensation of tightness in my chest, and so describe the sensations and of that you're aware of. And it might turn out that there are sensations that are happening that you weren't aware of, and that challenge is enough to focus your attention and bring them into your awareness. So we'll do that for 5 minutes and then we'll swap roles. So the other person will then spend 5 minutes saying what they are aware of. So everyone happy that they understand the exercise? But I'm just going to set up the breakout rooms. I don't want one breakout room. Two breakout rooms. And where are they gone? Oh, they're over here. Sorry, I'll be with you in a moment. Try again. Breakout rooms. And I need to assign people, so... Okay, so I will give you 10 minutes in the breakout room. And I will send a message at the halfway point to remind you to switch over. So open the rooms. Right. Hello, Adrian.
Hello.
Would you like to go first?
Sure.
I'm just going to set the timer.
Yeah. I am aware that I am tired. I'm aware that I am at times thinking about my day tomorrow. I'm aware that my chair is really uncomfortable.
Okay, that sounds like an evaluation to me. So what is the sensation that leads you to think it's uncomfortable?
I cannot feel my buttocks anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And my lower back is painful. Is, yeah.
Good.
I observe that my mind is thinking about whether I should eat after this or go straight to bed. I observe that there's a lot of, that I'm making a lot of, there's many times where my mind is racing to some projections and something in the future, from my day at work tomorrow to some things to plan for the weekend. I observe that I am in a very quiet place right now, undisturbed. I also note that I would have wanted to spend more time outside today. You observe that my living room is not as tidy as I would like it to be.
Is that an observation or a judgment?
I tried to say it without judgment, but I don't think it worked.
So what do you observe that leads you to think it's not as tidy as you would like it to be?
I observe that my desk is messy.
I'll give you that. It's
borderline.
borderline, but on the right side.
I observe that my bag is randomly on the floor in the middle of the room. And that there's a few books lying around.
Okay, thank you.
What else? I think that's about it. I mean, I'm aware of my surroundings. So I'm observing that I still have a few plants that haven't died yet.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'm just going to send a message.
Yeah.
Right now. There we go. And then reset the timer. So, what I am aware of, sitting on a chair with a, like you said, with a slight numbness in my bum. I'm aware of lights shining in my face. I'm aware of you looking at me through the camera. I'm aware of a bit of a tightness in my shoulders. I'm aware of lots of things on my desk. I've got a giraffe and a Jekyll, I've got a mug, and I've got a beaker. I've got lots of buttons in front of me that I'm aware of. I'm aware of a camera staring at me. I'm aware of a tangle of cables dangling down from above my desk to below my desk. I'm aware of bookshelves with lots of books stacked higgledy-piggledy. I'm aware of an empty plate next to my desk where I had my supper just before we started this call. I'm aware of me searching, trying to find things that I'm aware of. And I'm aware that that is taking me inside, whereas before I was, my attention was more focused outside. I'm aware of some thoughts going through my mind now, of things that I need to do tomorrow. I'm aware of I'm aware that my mind is once again getting in the way of me noticing. I'm aware that I'm trying to find things to be aware of, and that's almost like stopping me from being aware, because I'm going into this internal. I mean, there's so many things I could be noticing and I'm not noticing them because I'm thinking about what am I noticing. I'm aware of a tissue on my desk. I'm aware of the colour of the jumper that I'm wearing in white and grey and brown. I'm aware of the glasses that I've got on my nose. I'm aware that my tablet just went bing next to me. And I'm also aware that I don't know why it went bing. And that's kind of, if I let it, going to sidetrack me. I'm aware of I just want to censor myself and stop saying things that I'm aware of because they're so mundane and trivial. I'm aware of the pencils in my desk pencil holder. I'm aware of the pile of electronic junk and stuff that I've got on my shelf next to me that needs sorting out. I'm aware that you're watching me, and I'm aware that I imagine you might be kind of judging me as I do this, regardless of whether you are or not. That's kind of I'm aware of that projection. And we've run out of time, so I'm going to have to tell the breakout rooms. So I've given them 30 seconds to come back.
So you being aware that I might be judging you is an observation?
It's an observation of my...
Okay.
I'm not observing that you're judging me.
Okay.
I'm observing that that is what I am thinking.
Okay. Yeah. Makes sense.
And here they are. Welcome back. So how did you find that exercise?
Yeah, it was good. I was just going to say, it was like, I was just saying to Becky just before we finished, like it's so hard to go that extra layer deeper to uncover what's below the thing. Like it's, I don't know. I felt like I kept saying the same thing. I eventually got there, but it's very hard to uncover. Yeah. What's beneath, kind of.
Anyone else?
Yeah, I noticed that you've used these judging words yourself. I said I think I used the words bullshit to Mark, but that's an evaluation. But you use them. It's so hard not to use them, even when you're talking about your own experience. That awareness, yeah. I find it very, gave me great insight to me.
I think our group was lovely, wasn't it, Jade? And we were like, I think we did a lot of observation. And if a judgment, we really had to look into it, didn't we? Like, would that be a judgment? And then it was just a lot of... can you add to this? A lot of sort of like really meeting each other on, maybe we're in quite a similar place as well, I think. Can you add to that, Jaden? I don't know whether I'm doing it very much justice.
Yeah.
I'm a judgment there, Joe.
So there you go.
Yeah, I think.
Oh, you bugger.
We did like some observations, and then I think on my one I got a little bit sidetracked onto some judgments, but then I felt like we delved a little bit what was beneath those, and that was like really insightful for me to think about judgment in that way. And then when Joe did their observations, it was like really, really fluid. It's like they felt they had really good awareness of what was going on for them.
Okay, so the other thing that I wanted to bring into this session before we finish is the Jekyll and the giraffe. Now I know some people have done course NVC courses and have come across this before, but not everyone has. So just to be clear what is going on when we talk about Jekyll and giraffe. And Marshall Rosenberg came up with these two metaphors, and he picked the giraffe as being a metaphor for compassion because the giraffe is the largest land animal, has the largest heart of land animals. And the reason it's got a large heart is because it's got to pump the blood all the way up the neck to its head. So it kind of makes sense. And he was actually wrong. The largest animal, the animal with the largest heart is actually the blue whale. But we're not gonna fault him for his biology there. We're gonna go with the land animal with the largest heart, which is giraffe. So the giraffe represents compassion, and the Jekyll, it represents non-compassion, because the Jekyll is interested in getting its own needs met, regardless of anyone else. So that is where the Jekyll comes from. And when Marshall Rosenberg, if you ever seen any videos of him working with people, he not only uses the metaphor, but he also has puppets. The giraffe and the Jekyll. I couldn't find a Jekyll puppet, so I've had to use a fox, I'm afraid. But you'll have. But, so talking with the giraffe, he has the giraffe puppet up, and then when he's talking with the Jekyll, he gets the Jekyll puppet up, and the Jekyll's talking pretty Jekyll-y. So we've got the Jekyll and the giraffe. So when you hear Jekyll and giraffe, that's what we're talking about. The giraffe is the coming from the speaking from the heart and being compassionate, and the Jekyll is about getting your own needs met regardless of anything else. So that's the Jekyll and the giraffe for those who.
I have a technical question. What is a Jekyll?
A Jekyll, it's a dog-like creature. J-A-A-L. They come from Africa, I believe. I'm not really a biologist, but they're kind of bit wolf-like, bit dog-like. They've got pointy ears, a bit like a fox, which is why I went for the fox. Oh, is that Nelly there? Hello.
Hello.
With your puppet, yes.
Yes.
Very nice. The elephant puppet. I don't know where the elephant fits into the Marshall classification. But that was just to introduce you to the Jekyll and the giraffe in case you were wondering about that. So I'm going to set you some homework now. But before I do that, has anyone... What has been your experience of today? Have you got anything that you want to bring to the group for us to process before we go our separate ways?
I do have something to say quickly. Yeah. And that is that for me, NVC and the Jekyll and the giraffe was transformational in terms of recognizing when you speak to yourself with that language. And it also taught me compassion because I realized that other people have their own inner language where they're talking to themselves badly like a Jekyll. And it gave me real insight. So I think I know it's funny with the puppets, but the exercises that we did when I was doing the course were transformational for me. So thank you for today. And thank you for all of you for being here and doing this practice.
Okay. So the homework that I'm going to give you this month is not difficult. It's not even time consuming, I don't think, but I just ask you to set aside
a few... Is that an observation or is that an evaluation?
Sorry?
Is that an observation or is that an evaluation, Edmund?
I said, I don't think it's difficult. So that is an observation of my thought.
Oh, no.
But you are free to disagree with that thought. And if I said it's not, did I say it's not difficult or I said I don't think it's difficult? I can't remember what I said now.
I don't think.
If I said I don't think it's difficult, then I was making an observation. If I said it's not difficult, then I was making an evaluation. So thank you, Adrian. Very, very well caught there. So the exercise for you to practice at home is just to set aside a few minutes each day and practice noticing. So say to yourself, at the moment, I am aware of, and so do that awareness exercise that we did in breakout rooms. And when you're doing that noticing, also notice any judgments that you make about what you notice. So it's really just to repeat what we were doing, and you don't have to spend very long and you don't have to do it every day, but just to get into the habit of noticing and then noticing your judgments about noticing. And
can I ask a quick question?
Yeah.
I mean, a good, just back to the observation thing. I mean, surely a good observation. Oh, she's a very lovely person. Surely that's, you know, a positive thing.
I'm not saying judgments are not positive. They can be positive, but it is still a judgment. And so
we're just practicing the difference.
Yeah, is to become clear about when you're judging and when you're observing. And as I said earlier, judging is not bad. Judging is what we do because we've evolved to do it. We do it automatically. But what I'm encouraging you to become proficient in is noticing those judgments. And then once you've noticed them, you could choose what you do about them. You might choose to express them, or you might choose not to express them. And we'll talk about expressing when we come on to the requests and what you say to people. But at the moment, it's all just about noticing in yourself whether you're making a judgment or an observation. And I'll also give you some references. If you want to, as I said, this area of observation is massive, and it falls under the domain of what is known as phenomenology. And if you want to look up Husserl, Edmund Husserl and Maurice Merleau-Ponty are two of the philosophers who have written about this.
Can you link them in the WhatsApp, Ed?
I will. I've got notes with these references for you to follow up on if you want to. There's also a short introduction to phenomenology. There's a webpage at Warwick University, which is very good. So I will point you to that as well. And finally, there's a book called An Introduction to Gestalt by Sills, Lapworth and Desmond. And that has got a chapter on phenomenology and awareness. And that's a very good introduction, and it includes more exercises for people who are training in Gestalt therapy. So those are some references for you to follow up. And one other book that I've found absolutely riveting and well worth a read, and that is Jonathan Haidt's book, The Righteous Mind, which is about how different people can both be rational and have completely different views about the same thing, and how that arises and what to do about it, really. So and there's a website that he's got with that book called righteousmind.com, which is worth checking out as well. So that is really all that I wanted to cover today. Is there anything else anyone wants to raise before we do our checkout? Okay, so I'll invite you each to check out in turn. And once again, if you could check out with a feeling and the underlying need, and whether that need has been met or not. And let's go alphabetically again. So Adrian, if you'd like to start, please.
I am feeling grateful for having taken the time to join, and for all of you to have joined. Thank you, Edmund, for running those and offering your time to do this. I think that's very insightful and great practice. And I'm very happy to have joined that group with you. And I feel surprisingly more energized than when I joined. So it's a good feeling. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Adrian. I was thinking about how I felt while you were, and I'm feeling more confident after this session. It's it's a nice feeling to be getting some new tools. And I feel, I love the way that, because quite sometimes I can be like feeling quite cynical when I'm learning things. And I really like the fact that that's not, my jackal isn't chirruping away. I'm just listening and accepting and just letting it, and I'm trusting the process, and I being confident, and I like the way that you set out what we're going to do, and I like that a lot. And I think, and the need is for peace and for calm, and yeah, that's been met for this while, and I'm going to try and hold on to it a bit while I'm afterwards as well. So thank you very much. That's me out.
Thank you. So that'll be me next then. Yes, I'm feeling a lot more relaxed than when we started. I'm happy. I think that's what I'm feeling. And the need was very hard to pin down the need, because I keep thinking of the strategies rather than the need. It's almost like I have a need for self-actualization, and this is fulfilling that need. So that need is being met. And it's also a need for connection. Yeah. And you are meeting that need for me. Thank you.
I think I'm feeling connected and energized. It's just a really lovely atmosphere in this group. It's a really lovely place to learn new things. I think I've met a need for community. I think at the start I talked about stability, but I think maybe it was more of a need to sort of just check in with other people and also with myself, and I feel that I've really met that need.
Thank you.
Was it me? I feel relaxed and happy. It was a really nice day, and so tonight's just the icing on the cake. I agree with JJ, and it's a really, really lovely, lovely group. Need, I think, tonight I had a need to enjoy, to really show up and enjoy and connect. And it was definitely, definitely met. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Ed. It was lovely, by the way, the structure and the breakout room, it was just the perfect balance. So thank you, everyone.
I feel quite kind of energized by it as well. Like, it was a good session. I think, like, I come into these things often feeling like I'm going to be very tired and feel the opposite at the end of them, that I'm actually like feeling energy from it. And had an observation, just like when you were talking about the whenever I've seen in the Jekyll and the giraffe thing, I always, like, a big judgment comes up for me. It's like, oh no, I don't like all that. But that is actually probably the biggest lesson I've taken from this one, is actually I'm evaluating the whole method based on that. So that was a good learning for me, and something I'll take from it. But feeling, I suppose, the need was for a good space to practice this stuff, and it's definitely been met now. And I feel like, agree, the session was had a really nice balance to it today, with the breaks and, you know, a bit of learning here and a bit of application there. So feeling good about it. So thanks, Edmund.
Right, thank you very much, everyone. Can I remind you that there's a feedback form on my website, so I invite you to fill that in. I do take notice of the feedback, and I will make changes based on what you say. And I've also put up some resources on that website, including the notes from this session and last session, and some other material that I found on the NVC Academy website that is open source, and I'm allowed to post it. And that includes, Becky, for your information, there's a version of the skills matrix that's got more descriptions rather than the ones that I got from just writing it down. So if you want to check out the skills matrix again, then you might find it useful to refer to that version of it. And with that, just say thank you very much, everyone. I've really enjoyed this evening, and look forward to seeing you all in a month's time.
Thank you,
everyone. Have a good evening.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. Bye.